That you have to get your hands dirty. You can't do a startup with a corporate mindset.
When people tell me that I can't do something, I will do whatever it takes to prove them wrong.
Life mein na do tarah se compensate hote ho aap. One is your earning and one is your learning.
Fundamental each has always been khud karo.
I'm your host, Akshay Dutt, and you're listening to Spotlight, a podcast in which I speak to disruptive startup founders.
Hi, I'm Sarvesh Srivastav, founder and managing director of UFS Learning, situated in New Delhi. Glad to be on the show.
The image we have of most startups is that there were 2-3 people who saw a problem as an opportunity and plunged in, raised some money, and the flywheel got started. In this episode, you will hear about a very different type of startup. This is a startup with 44 co-founders. That's right, 44 co-founders, all of whom were a part of the Britannica Encyclopedia EdTech team in India. This co-founding team put in their life savings to get their baby off the ground, which they named UFS Learning. And the results have been fascinating. Today, UFS is among the largest EdTech startups that is focused on partnering with schools instead of trying to replace them. If there is one thing the pandemic has taught everyone, it's that schools are critical for kids to learn and develop both academically and socially. And UFS is the EdTech partner of more than 5,500 schools, thereby impacting 4 million students to get better quality education using modern digital tools. Here's Sarvesh Srivastav, the founder and CEO of UFS, telling Akshay Dutt about this wonderful journey.
What was the first job you found here, and how did your career progress after that?
So, this is an interesting story. My master's in chemical engineering bordered on electromagnetics. And at GE, I was working on how clear the plastics can be made, and one of the applications that was being planned is optical fibers. And optical fibers were very new as far as communication technology is concerned at that time. And I was lucky that Corning selected me to introduce optical fibers in India. I was also with Telecom Australia, representing them in India. So that is how I returned back to India, representing two really giant companies at that time, Telecom Australia as well as Corning. And it was a very interesting...
So you were like a consultant with them?
No, I was the representative for India and South Asia. So I was on a salary.
Okay, but with two companies, like they were both okay with that, like.
Yeah, so one after other.
And so this was essentially like a go-to-market role for these companies, like you were opening the Indian market for them.
Yes. Indian market was opening up at that time, Akshay, and however, deregulation happened in the early 90s. And I came back to India in the 1987 period. So I have seen a lot of change as far as industry is concerned. Pre-1990s, it was difficult because everything was controlled by the license raj. And it was a little challenging to do business in India. Because you could only interface with the people who had licenses for a particular technology. And but post deregulation of the economy in the 90s, things really opened up. In fact, after Telecom Australia, I ventured with my own company to provide, as the only solution provider in India, to install and commission optical fiber systems in India. And that was a very interesting period of my life where I saw rapid growth and adoption of technology. And that led me, to as far as application of technology was concerned, I saw that there was humongous potential for technology introduction in the education sector. And the education sector at the turn of the century was, everyone was starting to talk about e-learning, how technology can be adopted for learning. And various systems were there. If I go back to that time, everyone was really so positive about application of technology in education, but really it has taken 20 years for the adoption of technology in a large manner, even to the grassroots level. Only after this pandemic has come in. So this pandemic has come as a huge boon as far as adoption of technology in learning is concerned, down to the grassroots level. My daughter is a Teach for India fellow, and she's teaching in a privileged school. And I'll tell you, all her classes are online, her assessments are online, and this was unheard of till this time. In fact, I go back to when she was graduating from school, and the school had asked the parents whether they should allow mobile phones in the classroom. And you would be surprised, I was the only one who said it must be allowed. And the other parents were after me that how can you let children use phones? And I said, you can't straitjacket them. And that is the way technology will take over. And before you know it, you won't be able to stop that. Yeah, I have always been very positive about application of technology in education, and since the turn of the century, that is what I have focused myself on.
I guess that was the time when you had like the first wave of these precursors to edtech companies like Career Launcher, EduComp, there was this company called Compass, NIIT, all of these companies were like picking up steam around that time.
Yeah, so to get into education, NIIT was very big at that time, and it was covering application of technology in a very comprehensive manner. And I joined NIIT, and on joining NIIT, I got involved in creating curriculums, not for India, but for the US. Because US was much ahead of us in adopting technology, both online, offline, and in the hybrid mode. So hybrid mode is when you use both the digital as well as or online with the offline classroom. So I was developing curriculums for a lot of institutes in US for NIIT. And post that, I got involved with the retail.
This was like a B2B service.
It was a B2B service where entire curriculums were being created for the schools in the United States because they were going after the adoption of e-learning in a very, very large manner. We obviously had a lag as far as that is concerned, as far as India is concerned. And Post that, I got involved with the retail education side of NIIT. When I say retail education side of NIIT, I mean the NIIT centers. And I was heading that outside of India in the rest of the world portion. And we had over 600 centers outside of India.
So this must have been a pretty massive portfolio for them that you were leading.
Yeah, it was very engaging. It was very, very exciting, because what we were taking outside to the world was how to do online and hybrid education, and we were opening centers in collaboration with governments. So, for example, the center in Cuba was inaugurated during my time, and it was a very interesting experience to learn about the education systems outside of India and what they were doing to adopt technology. During our stint at Encyclopedia Britannica, there were several gaps in the education system. And we said we need to plug those gaps. And you would be surprised to learn that to start off UFES, we not only joined UFES with our extensive experience which we put to bear, but we put in our whatever money we had saved up as salaried people to start off UFES by putting a seed capital of close to $1 million.
Wow. So there were like 50 people who started UFES together, like the founding team is 50 people?
Yes. 50 people left Britannica to start this. And the gaps were very interesting. So the one large gap that we saw was various providers were providing various resources for learning. So what do I mean by that? What I mean by that is, as far as textbooks are concerned, they were separate suppliers for textbook for the schools. Then you had separate suppliers for the digital material which a teacher uses in the classroom. Then there was a new breed of suppliers who said, we can impart learning to you at home in the B2C model, which is direct to the student. All this is fine, except when you drill down, you find that the textbook, which is the anchor for learning, is based on a certain pedagogy. Pedagogy is method of learning. The textbook has a defined difficulty level. Now, the other solutions have to match it. Otherwise, there will be disparity and confusion in the mind of the learner. So let me explain this further to you in detail. You learn how to solve a particular math problem in a particular way by the teacher using the textbook. It is to a difficulty level which matches what the teacher wants to teach. Then you have a home learning solution which comes and says, guess what? I will teach you differently. And they use a methodology of solving the same problem using a different methodology. Right? And they present to you problems which are of a totally different level. So the student is confused which level to follow, and what method do I use in the classroom to solve a question. And it becomes very difficult for the teacher, because and the student, if they solve a problem in a different method than what has been taught by the teacher gets very hassled, the teacher gets very annoyed. So, and this happens a lot of times. Forget about everything else. There are many parents who want to get involved with teaching the kids, which is very good. But then they say, why are you solving this subtraction in this manner? Something which the teacher has taught them to do in a particular way. I will show you a shorter way. And then the student goes to the classroom and uses that shorter way, and the teacher shouts and says, I told you this way to solve the problem. Why are you solving the problem in another way? This happens a lot of time. It has happened to me as a parent with my daughter. Ultimately, my daughter said, please stop teaching me.
Okay.
I also stopped going to parent-teacher meetings, because I would get into an argument on why, if the answer is correct, why should the student be penalized? But later on, I understood that it is best that a particular methodology is followed in a particular manner, and one should not tinker with it, otherwise, the whole system of learning gets affected.
But what was the problem statement behind UFS?
The problem statement behind UFS was, how do we offer a seamlessly integrated solution for the classroom learning and at-home learning? There should not be any disparity in the two, so that the learner is confident, the learner is able to achieve the learning outcomes which is required in a very effective manner. This was the first statement problem.
Doesn't this already exist? I mean, schools typically give workbooks to do at home, and I mean, doesn't it already exist?
No, it doesn't. So let us look at what do B2C learning companies offer. They say that, let me teach you this same concept again. One is getting through the fundamentals of the concept. Then it is assessment. How to assess the student whether the concept has been learned properly. And finally, it is also revision or remediation required where a concept has not been learned effectively. So home learning is all about remediation for ensuring that the concept has been learned well and the student is confident on answering questions on that concept.
So essentially, then, if I understand, what you're trying to do is marry products like, say, Exceed. So Exceed is a product for schools where they give workbooks and like train the teachers on how to teach using a methodology, with products like Merit Nation or Extra Marks, which are purely for after school remediation, as you said. The goal was to marry these two into a single offering where both in school and remediation at home is offered through the same platform.
Correct. To ensure that there is no disparity in the depth and the width of learning, as well as the pedagogy of learning.
So So, what did you launch with? Tell me about your go-to-market journey.
Yeah, so that was one gap that we saw. The second gap that we saw was while countries across the world were adopting and giving emphasis to 21st century skills, we were way behind as far as India is concerned in imparting 21st century skills to the learner. So we said, we have to launch solutions right up front with 21st century skills. So there are four areas which are very important as far as 21st century skills are concerned. One is creativity. How do we foster creativity? The second is, how do we build collaboration amongst the learner? Because outside, in the outside world, you have to collaborate as a team to solve a problem. So collaboration is very important. The third is communication. If you are lacking in communication, then collaboration cannot take place effectively. And the fourth, which is very, very important for India, because we have an emphasis, I'm sorry to say, on rote learning, whereas focus has to be on critical thinking. So how do we build it into the learning products or learning solutions that we offer and we took to the market? We, from day one, emphasized 21st century skills. We said we have to marry home learning and classroom learning. Those were the focus areas with which we began UFS. And we were pleasantly surprised, and thanks to the huge amount of experience which the team brought with it to UFS, that we were able to crack 1,700 schools in the first year itself.
Can you describe the product that you launched?
So the products were all, we launched with four subjects. In the short time we had, we said, let us look at math, let us look at information technology, let us look at grammar. And so those were the subjects that we launched with. In math.
So for which classes?
From class 1 to 8. So for example, in math, we said, what is happening outside of India? What pedagogy or methodology is seen as most effective? And what we found was that the kids in Singapore are performing very well as far as the international PISA tests are concerned. Singapore kids were up there, and not in one single year, but consistently.
And what is a PISA test?
PISA is a international test to assess the learning outcomes of students in various countries. India was participating in the PISA test. We did not do so, but from this year, I believe we are participating in the PISA test. So they were performing very well. And one of the reasons why they were performing very well is that math was taught to them through visual pedagogy, through visual methodology. So, and it is called the bar method of learning. So, we said we will launch the math textbook with the Singapore bar model. And that was an instant success in the market, where we were able to convince the schools that, listen, this is a new methodology. It's more visual. And this is Singapore bar model. It has been found to be very effective, so effective that schools in US and other parts of the world started to adopt the Singapore bar model. So we introduced that.
So the product in 2017, like if I understand correctly, in 2017, the product was textbooks.
The product was textbook. The not all of it was textbook. We said in the short time we have, by the way, when we began UFES, we said we first need to establish the brand in the market. To establish the brand, let us begin with what is the anchor of learning, which is the textbook. Let's first establish ourselves in the textbook side of things, along with digital material which the teacher requires, so as to complete the classroom side of learning. We said in the fourth year, which is the year running now, we would launch the home learning part. So when we, so it was a full plan with which we launched UFES. And you are right, in the first year, it was primarily textbook along with the resources, digital resources, which a teacher would require in the classroom.
So those resources were like available through a website where they could download PDFs or PPTs or videos, like things like those.
Absolutely. Or at that time, if you go back to 2017, CDs were still very popular.
Yes. Okay. So the book came with a CD.
With a CD, yes.
And how many books did you sell in year one?
So in year one, if I remember correctly, we sold about 1.5 million textbooks.
Wow, that's a massive size. And what was the distribution model? Were you like directly going to schools or was it through the traditional channels?
No, so that's a very good point. We said we will go to the school, convince the school of the product and the solution that we were coming up with. And once the school was convinced, we had to necessarily go through the bookstore. You see, because what happens is the school selects your solution, but the bookstore remains to be one. So various people have to provide the thing to the bookstore, their products to the bookstore, and the bookstore then makes it into a bundle and gives it to the parent. So the distribution channel we adopted the distribution channel, but as far as the selling and convincing is concerned, we did that directly to the schools, and to ensure that our solutions were imparted in an effective manner, we trained teachers through workshops. These are training workshops that we do. It is not so much specific to the product, it is generic to the subject on how the subject is to be imparted, obviously using our solution. So training of teachers is, pardon me?
And these are free workshops?
These are free workshops. Whether the school prescribes a product or not, we offer free workshops across India. In fact, we would have trained about 75,000 teachers last year.
Wow. So this in itself is a huge marketing channel then. Like anybody attending the workshop would come away convinced about the UFES approach.
And as well as how to teach the subject. I would emphasize on that. Many of our workshops is not talking about the UPS product. It is talking about how to teach that particular subject effectively.
So in a way, this model is a lot like pharma companies, where pharma companies are selling through pharmacists, but at the same time, they are educating doctors about the products. They are doing workshops for doctors about the products. So it sounds very similar to that kind of an approach.
You are right. It's very similar to the how the medicine and medical products are promoted in the market. Yeah, so for example, continuing with the 21st century skills, we are currently doing a lot of workshops on reading. How important reading is as far as learning is concerned. And we see this because if you study the statistics, then the role of reading and the adoption of reading by learners has gone down considerably. So we said this is one area where we have to impart importance of reading and promote reading as far as the learners are concerned, and we have to train the teachers in the art of storytelling. Because if you are able to tell a story well, it inculcates the habit of reading. So that is one area. The second area, which is very important and which is making a lot of waves, is coding. So coding and artificial intelligence is another area where we are currently conducting workshops across India for educators. And it has nothing to do with our product portfolio. It is more what we believe are the focus areas and how to promote it.
So how many SKUs did you have in year one? You know, like how many different types of books? Like you had like maths for class one, class two, class three, like?
Yeah, four subject classes, 1 to 8.
Okay, so 4 into 8 were the number of SKUs. And today, what is that number like?
Today, that number is humongous. Because what happened is, we said, as far as our thesis is concerned, that time to market is very important for us. One can't develop solutions ourselves, create learning materials all ourselves. Let us look for acquiring titles, acquiring learning solutions, whether be it technology, be it textbooks, and how, and we would ensure that by going through them that they are very effective and cherry pick them for offering to schools. So in the second year, in the first year, we were only focused on CBSE schools. And we wanted to get into ICSE school segment as well. So we acquired the entire school catalog of Allied Publishers. Allied Publishers is an 80-year-old publisher of India, very reputed. And they decided to give us the entire catalog because we convinced them that we can do much more with their existing catalog as far as digital side of learning is concerned, which they were not addressing. So they decided to give the entire catalog, and that catalog itself is 300 plus titles in various subjects. In fact, one of the books is a very popular product, which is Dr. Dalal's Chemistry, which is used by over 60% of the schools or ICSE schools in India. So that is what we are doing. And currently, if you ask me the number of SKUs, it would be close to 800-900 SKUs.
Wow. And what is the number of books you're selling now per year? Like,
We are selling close to 4.5 million books today.
This, like, what geography, like, you know, what, like, is it primarily tier one cities or is it?
Yeah, so when we began UPS, we said, what are the geographies that we address? Given the fact that we are starting, we don't have much time because we started operations in June 2017. We don't have much time for to catch the academic year. So we said we will focus on the North India geography because that is where you have the maximum number of schools. If you see the school distribution in India, North India has the maximum density of schools. And so we began with North India. We North India, East India to a bit, and Central India, including Andhra Pradesh. That is what we began with. Second year onwards, we have expanded into South India and West India as well. So that is as far as the geographical distribution is concerned. Today, we are present in over 70 cities across India to service tier three cities as well. If you were to do a composition of schools that we have currently today, it is an even distribution between tier one, tier two, and tier three.
Who would be, you know, can you describe your target school? For example, would a school like Columbus be your target school?
Absolutely. Columbus is a target school. Delhi public schools are using our products. Many A category schools across India are using our product. And this is where I would emphasize what I was earlier speaking on, the width and the depth. You see, the A category schools can't be compared with C category schools in India. C category schools in India require a different textbook, which is to a lower level. So everyone goes to the requirement of the examinations of 11th and 12th, but the way and acceleration is different in a DPS as compared to some other tertiary school. So that is why I was emphasizing on depth and difficulty levels, which may differ from a type of school present in the metros, which is one of the top schools, as compared to any other school which may be in the hinterland.
So you have like a different product line for like a DPS kind of a school and a different product line for a tier three kind of a school.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is, we have to have a differentiated approach. We have to match the style of the teacher. If we don't match that, then we will not be prescribed.
And what is your product mix today? Like, is it besides books, are there other components in your product mix today?
Yeah, absolutely. So another area, you see, when we talk about 21st century skills, we have to talk about supplemental learning, because they were not covered in the main curriculum side or syllabus side of learning. So to impart 21st century skills, we necessarily had to collaborate with the best providers across the globe to bring 21st learning skills to learners in India. So we collaborated with World Book, we collaborated with the RoboGarden for coding. So we have over 19 such collaborations as far as imparting supplemental learning is concerned, and which we feel is very important.
So what does supplemental learning mean?
So supplemental learning means...
Supplemental learning means in school or at home?
Both, I would say. Why? Because, so let me give you an example. Let's say in the classroom, the problem statement is, what are the mineral resources of Sri Lanka? For the learner to explore, discover, and learn what are the mineral resources of Sri Lanka, they require supplemental aids. Similarly, today, if coding is not covered in the curriculum or the syllabus, and we are offering coding as a necessary learning for 21st century skill, then that will be regarded as supplemental learning because it is not covered in the syllabus.
Got it. Is this something which is sold to the school and the school prescribes it further?
Yes. So we were very clear when we began UFES that the model that we will adopt will be B2B2C. So what do I mean by B2B2C? We said that as a thesis, we will offer whatever we have to as an offering to the school. For a learner to access the home learning solution, they have to go through the school. So the school more or less prescribes even a supplemental learning product. Says this is important for your learning. It is not part of the tuition. It is something that a learner has to pay for extra to whatever they are learning in school.
You know, schools have this SUPW. I don't know what it's called today, but at our times it used to be called SUPW. This was a period in which they would teach stuff which does not come in the exams, like say art and craft or music or things like that. So do these supplemental courses also get covered by schools in those periods?
Yes. So I would say they are not covered in a SUPW when you spoke about I believe it's a curricular offering. It is not a supplemental learning. It is up to the student to opt for it, but then the student is, it's prescribed under the syllabus. So one way to look at it is it prescribed in the syllabus or is it not? If it is not prescribed in the syllabus, it will become supplemental learning.
And how are these supplemental learning courses sold? Is it through books or through a subscription to a website? Or what is the approach here?
The approach here is both. If it all depends on what are you offering. So, for example, handwriting. It is another area which needs considerable improvement as far as India is concerned. If you look at handwriting, and I compare it to my days in school, I see that the handwriting quality has gone down tremendously. Now the kids want, all they want to do is use their thumbs on the mobile phone, which is veiling the handwriting, cursive writing part. So that has to be necessarily through a textbook or a book. Let me not call it textbook because textbook is syllabus prescribed. I will call it just a book where the student will learn cursive writing and learn how to improve their handwriting. So it all depends on what you are trying to impart.
But do you have like a portal also where you are selling some online courses?
Absolutely. We have a portal, for example, reading and coding. Currently, the students can go to the portal and subscribe to coding courses. They can subscribe to reading courses. which can be both instructor led or self paced.
So is there a linkage of the school with this? Like when they subscribe, for example, do they enter their school or do they get a code from the school that they fill out when they are subscribing? Does school come into this transaction?
Yeah, the school definitely comes into the transaction. And that is why we are saying we are not going to the customer directly or the learner directly. We are necessarily involving the school. Why? Because we feel this is very important for the school to know of the solution that we are taking to the students. And we have the endorsement of the school for that offering. We feel that without the endorsement of the school, while we may take something to directly to the student, it is not fruitful, because we strongly believe that the school and the teacher should know what a student is learning outside at home and whether it is leading up to a complete holistic learning process.
How exactly is the school involved in this? Do they have to enter the name of the school and all that? Like,
Yeah. So they are given a code. They are given a code. They use the code. Through that, they are able to access the course.
But if I'm, like, say, you know, not part of a school, but I just want to join a UCS course, I can just join, or I necessarily need a code from a school first?
No, you can't. If we receive a request like this from a learner, we go back to the school and say, please help us. Your students are asking for this course. This is what we offer. And if you feel that this is something that your student should be learning about and it will enforce the overall learning for the students, then we will give access. You provide us the school code.
Okay. And what does the school get in this? Do they get like a dashboard where they can see students and what courses they are doing and things like that? Or?
Absolutely. The teacher gets all analytics for this.
Okay. And the payment comes through the school, or it's a like an online payment gateway?
It is through the school. We like to do everything through the school.
So essentially, you are like an education partner for schools. Like everything which a school would require to ensure effective learning for their student base, you would help the school in through books, through online courses. Like that is your role, basically.
Absolutely. And what has happened over these 4 years is we have possibly made the largest distribution system for products to the school. Why do I say that? We are not just offering our home-built products, but we are collaborating with several startups to take their effective solutions to the school and telling the school about it. And so we are acting as a distribution pipe, if you may call it.
How many schools are you partnering with?
As of last year, we are present in over 5,500 schools in India, though our reach is over 13,000 schools in India. So if you go by the number of salespersons that we have who knock at the school doors, we are present across 13,000 schools, and the prescribing schools are over 5,500.
That is massive. Okay. And how does your sales organization work? You know, like, is it through like knocking doors and seeking appointments with principals and decision makers, or like, you know, how does that part work, and how big is your sales organization?
So the sales organization as we speak is about 126 people. And when I say that the experience that the team brings to the table is a lot of relationship is already existing. So yes, you may call. We don't actually do cold calling. So the sales process begins with the pre-sales. I told you, we do a lot of workshops that generates a lot of leads, which we follow. So there are various marketing activities that we do, which then opens the door to the school, and we are able to talk to the correct decision maker.
Besides these workshops, what else are you doing for marketing?
Besides these workshops, what we do is, let's say we are launching a product. So currently, the mode that we are adopting a lot is using WhatsApp and sending it to the correct person in the school so that they are aware that such a product is available. These are the differentiators. These are the important things why it should be that particular product should be introduced in the school. So that is, we are finding a very effective ways of communicating with the school.
Okay. And this is an automated process or manual, like the WhatsApp sending update, the WhatsApp update?
No. It's an automated process. It's an automated process. We have mapped all the schools in India in our system. And so it is an automated process.
And what is your annual revenue rate that you currently do, like if you are at liberty to share?
I would rather, you see, being an entrepreneur, I would rather not stick to revenue. I would rather stick to how many students am I taking my solutions to, improving their life. So if you ask me what is my 3-year target, I would say in 3 years, I want to be present with 10 million students. That is what I tell my team also, that revenue is a byproduct.
What is the number today?
4.6 million. So you see, revenue is, for example, let me give you a product that we have. It is called Wise Floor. And what it does is that we install a projector on the ceiling, and it converts the floor into a totally interactive floor. So children can, it promotes kinesthetic learning, where children can play with the balloons and learn something as far as, say, letters are concerned. This is for the kindergarten, where kinesthetic learning is very important. Now, that product is priced at around 9 lakh per school. Now, so different products have different price points. So I always, in my mind, it is the number of students' lives that I am bringing it better or getting it better, that is more important than revenue.
Right. Okay. And you had that initial seed funding from the founding team of about $1 million. After that, did you raise subsequent funds?
Yeah, so that is another thing which we are very proud of as a team, is that we have got to where we are with using or making effective use of the capital that we came up with. So the total funding that we have received till now is about $10 million.
This is the external funding.
Yeah, and we became profitable in the second year itself.
So How has the pandemic affected the business? Are you seeing that there is less demand for physical books, or what has been the impact?
So what has happened actually is the demand for books will not go away. What has happened is that during the pandemic, everything has got pushed. The academic year got pushed. The book sales got pushed. So what the books we should have sold by March of this year has got pushed to this year. So what is happening is a lot of pushing has taken place. But forget about the textbooks. The biggest boon for the learning industry as far as COVID has brought about is something very similar to what happened during demonetization with fintech, where because of a very disruptive change in our lives, which has been brought about by this pandemic, the adoption for e-learning, adoption for digital learning has taken off. And I would say that it has taken off irreversibly. What I would have dreamt about as something to happen 20 years back is has happened within a span of 1 year.
In your core product of syllabus related textbooks, is that also available digitally? Because supplemental, you told me, is largely available digitally. What about the core syllabus related product?
They are available. This is something very important that you have brought about, that you have asked. Our textbook is supplied with a digital counterpart. The difference is that the digital book is interactive, whereas a physical textbook is not interactive. So we offer both the solution to the student. It is up to the student to adopt the digital version or use the physical version. Why we have to do this is because, till now, digital adoption was not as common as it is today. And we feel that the textbook adoption digitally will also start taking place as we move forward, because of the interactivity they offer.
How does a student access the digital textbook? Is it like you have to first buy the physical book and then you get an access code, or can you just access the digital book without buying the physical?
Yeah. So you get an access code where you download the digital book, and the digital book is obviously has various lock-ins provisions. So that after 1 year of usage, they self delete themselves.
Okay. And this is like a desktop software, or what is it like?
Yeah, desktop software. You can use a mobile device also.
And like through an app, you can access it. But why don't you just sell digital version? Like people can just buy the access code alone without buying the physical book.
To tell you the truth, what we find is that students necessarily are preferring physical books right now, and we need to be in a phase when we promote the digital counterpart and show them how it is much more better, much more engaging, much more interactive as compared to a physical book. Only then, when we promote it, will adoption start taking place? And I think we have some time more along this path when learners will start opting for the digital version, as what we are seeing in other parts of the world.
Okay. And have you considered, cutting out the offline supply chain and directly, an e-commerce model where you directly deliver the books to the house of the student?
No, we have not. One of the reasons is, if we do that, then the cost of delivery becomes higher, and it would not be more cost effective to the learner.
Okay. That is surprising. I thought the e-commerce model promised savings because you're cutting out the supply chain in the middle.
The only problem with that is, again, I go back to the example where the bookseller provides the whole bundled solution for the entire curriculum for a particular class. Either we have a platform, a single platform, where all the solutions are provided under that platform, and it should not be that the student has to go for my textbook to my platform, for someone else's textbook solution to another platform. That will only mess things up.
But you provide the full stack, right? Like whatever book a student needs to buy, you are providing it, right?
You are right. But we leave it to the teacher.
I mean, you could start your own e-store, no?
We can, and we have, but the way it works, how the prescription model works, is that while I may have a very good textbook, but the teacher may be following a different textbook solution, and so may not prescribe my textbook for a particular subject, whereas another teacher in the same school will prescribe my textbook for that for another subject. So the whole model is very subject dependent, and so our offering has to be very modular.
So what do you think are the challenges for you personally as this company grows from 4.6 million students to 10 million students? You know, as the leader of the organization, what do you see are the challenges in front of you?
It's always is about scalability. You see, when we began the company, we began as a very, very cohesive team, because we had all worked with each other at least for a period of 4 years. And so there was a lot of camaraderie. How do we grow the organization with the same sense of camaraderie, the same sense of cohesiveness? That is, will always remain the biggest challenge. In my mind, that is the biggest challenge. Why? Because our model and our thesis is not just to grow organically, but to grow inorganically as well. And when you talk about inorganic growth, then the biggest challenge becomes integration of teams.
So like maintaining the culture as you grow, that is the key challenge in front of you.
Absolutely. Maintaining culture, maintaining systems and processes which are consistent. How is team bonding taking place? You have to go through all those challenges, especially with inorganic growth.
So the 50 member team are all like stakeholders, like everyone, all 50 of you who started this together.
Yeah, they are shareholders in the company.
I guess it's a fairly democratic kind of a culture which you would have, like, with a lot of decentralized decision making, because it's a very large stakeholder pool which you have.
Absolutely. And if we have to grow at the speed at which we are planning to grow, it has to be a democratic process. I have to ensure that decentralization is taking place, and which we do. You can't have micromanagement at all if you are planning to grow at the speed at which we are planning to grow.
But how do you balance decentralization with cohesive culture? Because, you know, it could happen that different teams develop different ethos and culture depending on the leader of the team, and teams stop cooperating with each other because it is so decentralized.
I think that is where the challenge is. And to overcome that, the single ingredient which overcomes everything is culture. If you have the culture well covered and the ingredients of culture well covered, then I think forming cohesive teams, because if they see the same culture, you may be working on different things. You may be working on different methodologies with different sets of cultures, work cultures, as compared to an overall culture which is consistent throughout the company.
How do you build that? Like an overall culture which is consistent, you know, how do you build that?
Yeah, so that is a challenge, and especially in these times when one is connected through technology most of the time, it is a challenge. But I think one of the things that we are fortunate with is that the 50 of us who started the company are now in leadership roles. And if we are having the same culture, then it ensures that all the teams who are reporting to them will also follow that culture. So the culture is not just implemented this way, it is also reinforced by various HR activities. And you'd be happy to know that 3 years in a row, we are certified as a great place to work.
Amazing. Okay. What is the total headcount?
Total headcount is 160 people right now. And we soon be over 200 people. So that is the plan for this year. We are growing. We are hiring as we speak. I think it gives an overall picture of the company about myself. And it's been great talking to you, Akshay.
This was The Spotlight, presented by The Podium. To listen to more such interesting conversations, log on to thepodium.in.